Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob, powered by All Access Football, NFLDraftBible.com in the house, CollegeFootballInsiders.com and FSC.FM. Let's get some action going up in this chat room. I'm in the chat room all by myself. There's nobody. My man Walkie 33. He's not in the chat room. You know why? Because his Cowboys fell apart. He doesn't want to face the music. That's what's going on. You think I don't know about that? You think I didn't see that? That total debacle? Dallas Cowboys just not showing up for the playoff game. And then they're getting mad that Minnesota's running up the score. Oh, man. The divisional round of the playoffs was probably just as bad as the wild card round. That's just like, that's unbelievable to me. We only had one good game in each round, and I don't even think that the Arizona-Green Bay wild card game was a good game. It's just the fact that nobody remembered how to play defense, and the score got out of hand there, and they went to overtime. So, in all actuality, I think the only good playoff game we've seen all playoff long was the Jets-San Diego game. That's just my little 2 cents on the matter there. But, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a lot to break down here. North Turner with a horrible coaching decision, as usual. Yet, he still gets an extension through 2013. Don't understand that at all. Indianapolis taking care of business. Baltimore has a couple of players that are thinking about retirement. That comes as a shock to me. I don't know about you guys, but that comes as a total shock to me. I didn't think it was that bad that a couple of Ravens want to jump ship now. Derek Mason and Ed Reed, of course, the two that I'm talking about. Jets, wow. Jets come through thanks to another couple of missed field goals there by Nate Kading. And, of course, Dallas doesn't even make the plane trip over to Minnesota. Guess they were too busy celebrating the fact that they finally won a playoff game last week. And they forgot that they had a game coming up. I don't know. But some news and notes. This just in, Brett Favre, he's kind of good. Brett Favre is pretty good. He looked fantastic against the Cowboys. 4 touchdowns, no picks, no turnovers. And Sidney Rice. Woof. Sidney Rice is a man possessed. 6 receptions. All right, all he had was 6 receptions, 141 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Wow. Talk about a beatdown, right? Talk about a total dismantling of a football team right there. Tony Romo, this just in, he sucks. Oh my goodness. You know, Tony Romo, he was definitely under siege, and you know, Jared Allen had a great game, and he was pressured pretty much the whole game, so it's not totally Romo's fault, but dude, you gotta protect the football. I know you're getting hit from all angles, but you can't fumble 3 times. You can't do it. Especially in a playoff game. And then lose 2 of them. You know? Protect the football. I mean, if you're going to go down with a sack, that's probably because, you know, you got Jared Allen matched up on Jason Witten, and that's just not going to work. But you got to hold on to the football. You can't just cough it up every time you get hit. You know? And that's my big pet peeve with Tony Romo. He doesn't protect the football. And that's fine when you're going up against, you know, the 1-15 Rams. But in the playoffs, you can't do that. You can't do that, and he continues to do that in the playoffs. And that's why they're never going anywhere with this guy. He's just not a clutch quarterback. And, you know, he's got that deer in headlights syndrome. He's got that, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to play it off like I am. And, you know, it's not going to work in the playoffs. But other things that I noticed about that game, Flozell Adams, I was so happy that he got injured. And, you know, you don't want to root for injuries, on players because it's a serious deal, you know. But this guy, I mean, he's the biggest piece of scum that's ever been created on the face of the earth. You know, I mean, he's the dirtiest player in the league, and he's not even good. I don't know how he keeps going to the Pro Bowl. You know, if it weren't for all the face masks and holding and false starts and all the penalties that he gets away with, he wouldn't be as effective as he is. So I don't know how he gets to the Pro Bowl. So I was very excited when he was injured and he couldn't come back. Because, you know, like I said before, guys, it's only a matter of time before he ends somebody's career with a cheap shot. So you got to get him out of the game before he does that. So good thing he got injured, so nobody else got injured. And, you know, Dallas. I just love to see Dallas fail. I mean, you know, their owner, it all starts with the owner. Jerry Jones, he would probably, he'd sell off his own mother for a winner. You know, like that kind of guy with no ethics and no integrity. You gotta love it when those kinds of guys fail. When they fall flat on their face and they get embarrassed, it's great. So when Minnesota was running up the score, and by the way, I think they were running up the score, it was pretty obvious. The play calling, the play selection late in that game to get that touchdown, Vasante Shenko from Brett Favre, it was pretty obvious they were running up the score. But you know what, since it's Dallas, do it. Go ahead. They should have scored more. And Keith Brooking, the nerve of this clown to get mad at this. You know, like, he was mouthing off after the game, saying that, oh, it was classless that Brad Childress and a play calling for the Minnesota Vikings. It was classless that they were trying to run up the score. You know what was really classless, Keith? It was forgetting to show up for the football game that could have sent you to the NFC Championship. That was classless. I had to sit through an awful football game. 3 hours of boring football. The game was over at halftime. There was no need to watch the rest of this massacre. So to put the fans through that kind of horrible football game, that was classless. And you know what else struck me as pretty interesting? You know, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you know, because, I mean, the fans knew it. I knew it. Anybody who was watching that game knew it. You knew they were trying to run up the score. So pride's got to kick in at one point, and you got to make a stand. You got to be like, listen, they're trying to embarrass us. We can't allow this to happen. And you allowed it to happen anyway. So, Keith Brooking, shut your face. You got nothing to complain about. The only thing you got to complain about is the fact that your team sucks. That's it. Your team can't play. In big games, you can't do it. They got nothing going offensively. They got nothing going defensively. But other than that, Dallas played a great game. Horrible. I love making fun of Dallas. And I love making fun of that horrible field goal kicker, Sean Sweezum. I told you guys he was going to choke in the playoffs. But, you know, he did miss two kicks, but, you know, being down by as much as they were, it didn't really matter how bad the kicker was. But I'm saying, even if it was a close game, they would have blown it because of their kicker. So they were just bound to lose that game anyway. And Brett Favre, again, you may not like him. I don't like him. I don't like the shenanigans. And I think he's going to do it next year, too. Oh, should I come back? Oh, should I retire? Oh, should I do this? Should I do that? He's probably going to do the same crap next year. But the boy could play. And he definitely showed that on Sunday. On Saturday, rather. Or Sunday. Whatever. Over the weekend. He showed that over the weekend. He is the man. What about that pass? That touchdown. One of the many touchdown passes to Sidney Rice when Gerald Sensabaugh didn't even know that the pass was thrown. Even after Sidney Rice caught it down the sideline, he didn't even know that the pass was even thrown or caught, and he kept running, and I thought that was hysterical. You know, I thought that was totally hysterical. Even Frank Walker wouldn't make as bad of a goof on defense as Gerald Sensabaugh did. That was hysterical. It was so hysterical, in fact, I think I'm going to watch the replay right now. And I suggest everybody else that's on the internet right now, go to NFL.com and watch this. It was so funny. It was so funny. But, yeah, there are a lot of other games going on. A lot of other games going on. Of course, we got to talk about the New York Jets. And the San Diego Chargers choking again in the playoffs. They just, I don't know what's going on with this team. You know, they were the hottest team coming in. 11 in a row. How do you win 11 in a row and then lose the first playoff game? At home. At home. It seems like warm weather teams play soft in the playoffs. You know? That's what it seems like to me. Seems like once you're already used to the nice 75 degree weather, there's no incentive to go out there and smash somebody in the face. You know? And that could be San Diego's problem. They just don't really have any heart out there. And they made a lot of mistakes. I mean, they probably played their C-minus game. And that'll allow a lesser team like the Jets to take advantage. And that's exactly what happened. And now you got to give the Jets a little credit, too. Because, you know, usually what the Jets will do, they'll have a lead like that late in the game, and then they'll just, like, you know, they'll blow the lead because they're just a hard luck, snake-bitten team. But I don't get that anymore from them. They seem with that new Rex Ryan attitude, they seem to have shaken that, oh, here we go again, same old Jets. That mentality of losing, it seems like it's gone. And they rise up to the occasion. On that 4th-and-1 play, when they had 1 yard to go, and they went for it, and they converted, and that was the ball game, you know the Jets, like 5 years ago, Herm Edwards, the horrible coach that he is, he probably would have punted the ball to play it safe, get your defense on the field because I'm too scared to win the game. I'd rather avoid losing the game than take the bull by the horns and win the game. So being that he's too scared, they would have screwed that up. And that's usually how the Jets would lose. You know, they're too scared to win that they eventually end up losing. But this Rex Ryan's team, a little different story. They take the bull by the horns. They're a take-charge kind of a football team. And even though they got a few gifts from Nate Kading, who should be ashamed of himself, by the way, even though they got a few gifts, I don't think the Jets 5 years ago would have been able to cash in on those gifts. They would have fumbled it away, like they always do. But this is a different team. This is definitely a different team. Phillip Rivers underperformed. Antonio Gates didn't get it done. It was a perfect storm for everything to go right for the Jets, and it did. And, you know, you got to give them credit. This has been like a roller coaster season for the Jets. Even before it started, I predicted that they would go to the playoffs. But then they went 3-0, and everybody's like, oh, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. And then they fall off. They get swept by the Miami Dolphins. They lose at home in overtime to the Buffalo Bills. I mean, they had a lot of disappointing losses. And I thought their goose was officially cooked when they lost at home to the Atlanta Falcons. And they were sitting there at 7-7. And I was like, you know what? My prediction was totally wrong. They are not going to the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, they get 2 exhibition games to finish off the season. And then they're in the playoffs. And then you're like, yeah, but they snuck in. They don't, even though they made the playoffs, they don't feel like a playoff team. And then all of a sudden, they beat the Bengals. And then all of a sudden, they beat the Chargers. Two road games against two division winners, and they pull it off. They can't beat the Bills, but they beat the Chargers and the Bengals. That's why it's the no figure league. You can't figure this stuff out, even if you try. And we try. We try to figure it out, but we just can't. It's impossible to figure this out. And then the Colts. Let's go over that game. You got the Colts. You got the Ravens. This was my upset special, and it didn't happen. 20-3. Oh, my goodness. Can we talk about how bad Joe Flacco is? Can we talk about that for a minute? Because I'm sick and tired of people talking about how good he is. He's Trent Dilfer Jr. That's all he is. And I don't understand what the big whoop about this guy is. He's not that good. And he proved that he's not that good. All right, two picks. You have 20 completions, and you only had 189 yards. These are all checkdown passes, people. These are not impressive throws down the field that he's completing. These are all checkdowns, and he didn't protect the football. He didn't protect the football. I mean, you gotta do that if you're the Ravens quarterback. All you gotta do is don't throw a pick. Punt the ball, rely on your defense, rely on your run. He didn't do it. He didn't do it. Yet the Indianapolis Colts are the perfect team for the Ravens to play against. Because they can't stop the run. They haven't stopped the run in the last 10 years. Just run the ball right down their throat. And they didn't do it. And they couldn't do it. So I think it's about time everybody just get off the Joe Flacco bandwagon. And I know, of course, you know, the quarterback gets most of the blame when they lose. He gets too much credit when they win. But when it comes to comparing him to Matt Ryan, and that's who he's always going to be compared to, because that's the same year they were drafted in the same year. Joe Flacco is a game manager, and Matt Ryan is a game changer. That's the major difference. And you may be saying, oh yeah, well, at least Flacco made the playoffs. Well, you know, Matt Ryan didn't really get a whole lot of help either. And they finished with the same record. Atlanta finished 9-7. Ravens finished 9-7. So, I mean, there's a lot of other factors that go into it. You had Michael Turner was pretty much injured most of the year. Jarius Norwood missed a lot of time, so there goes your running attack. And their defense, Atlanta's defense, is nowhere near as good as the Ravens. So I think Flacco has an edge there in terms of comparing overall teams. So we're going to see as time goes on that this guy is not, he's not all cracked up to be. But on the other side, I was impressed with Peyton Manning. I was impressed with Peyton Manning and his ability to pretty much do whatever he wanted on the offensive side of the ball. You know, this Ravens defense is no joke, but he made them look like a joke. 30 for 44, 246, two touchdowns, one pick. So against that ball-hawking defense, you only turn the ball over once. That's a pretty good game. And you got into the end zone. And you completed all your passes. 30 out of 44. That's a nice little clip there. So he's performing in the playoffs like he should for once. Now we got the Jets and the Colts coming up in the AFC Championship game. And I'm going to give you detailed information. All right, this is classified, detailed, top secret information as to why the Jets will come away with the victory in Indianapolis next week. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at BlogTalkRadio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at BlogTalkRadio.com/BaseballGeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the millions of American fantasy owners who suffer from Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros911.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome now.
Fantasy versus Reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed. More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lamming, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, we're back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We are powered by All Access Football, NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.FM. Let's get going in the chat room, fellas. It's kind of dead in there, and that's unacceptable on a Tuesday morning. But before the break, I promised everybody listening that I have classified, detailed, unbelievable, accurate information as to why the Jets will win and go to the Super Bowl. All right, I think Jim Caldwell, head coach of the Colts, you know, when he goes into the third quarter of this game against the Jets in the AFC Championship, he's going to say, you know what, I think we need to save our starters for the Super Bowl. So let's put in Curtis Painter. Let's put in guys you never heard of. You know, let's get guys like, you know, Brandon Stokley, take him out of mothballs, put him on the field. Let's get a bunch of guys that third, fourth, fifth, sixth string, and let's put them in there against the Jets because we really need to rest and save our guys for the Super Bowl. Of course, I'm taking a jab at Jim Caldwell because he cost me $120 in my fantasy league. He didn't cost me, but I could have won it. Not that I had to shell it out or anything. But, you know, that's what happens. That's what happens when you play fantasy sports and you start Peyton Manning week 16 when you know that they have no reason to go for the record. That's just the kind of thing that happens. But, you know, I'm over that. I'm not over that. There's no possible way I'm over that. He owes me, and I'm not going to let him forget it. All right? That's just the way it is. So, yeah, Jim Caldwell is going to rest all his players in the third quarter. You heard it here first. Classified information. But, really, I think the key to that game, of course, it's going to be pressure on Peyton Manning. I mean, it starts and ends with that, you know. It starts and ends with Peyton Manning. If they can get pressure on him and force him to throw off rhythm, because remember, that's a rhythm time. That's a timing offense. So if they can get him to throw and do things he doesn't want to do, they have a chance. And again, it's also going to come down to Mark Sanchez. He's going to have to make a play. He can't just, you know, go 8 for 15 with 35 yards. He's going to have to make some plays and then we're going to have to just see what kind of stones he has in a big game. So, you know, it's all going to come down to that. And it's also going to come down to the running game. You got to believe that the Jets will be willing and able to run the ball right down the throats of the Indianapolis Colts. So, you know, if they can get that going, if they can establish the run and work off of that, then it's anybody's ball game. You got to also keep Manning off the field. You got to control the clock, control time of possession, move the chains, convert on third downs. And if they can do that, man, it's anybody's game, any given Sunday. That's why they say any given Sunday, because, you know, if this was a seven-game series, like it is in baseball, basketball, hockey, and there's no question that the Colts will win. I mean, you wouldn't even have to watch the games. But, hey, it's just one game. It's just 60 minutes, and whoever's better on that particular day, that's who goes to the Super Bowl. That's what makes it interesting. It's a one-game series, and this allows me to go on my next soapbox about home field advantage. Home field advantage is totally meaningless in the playoffs, and that definitely bodes well for the Jets. And the reason I say home field advantage is meaningless is because all these teams in the playoffs, they're obviously pretty good because that's how they got this far. So if you're pretty good, it means you can win on the road. You know, if you're the Rams, and if you're a lousy team like the Rams, you're going up against the Colts, the only hope you have of beating a better team like the Colts is if you got the home crowd behind you. Because that'll give you the boost that you need maybe to get a little bit more out of your players than what you're used to. But if you're a playoff team and you're confident, like the Jets are, they are riding high. They are very confident right now. The Jets could play anywhere. They could play on the moon. Wouldn't matter. They have extreme confidence, and they have momentum. So wherever they're playing, home or away, doesn't matter at all. Doesn't matter a lick. Because you know Rex Ryan is just as confident at home as he is on the road. So that's why I believe home field advantage is totally overrated. In the regular season, it may matter, because that's what lesser teams need to get over the hump. But you know what? In the playoffs, it's a crapshoot. It's a total crapshoot. Home field advantage may matter a little bit more in college and high school, because you're not a pro yet, so you don't know how to win on the road yet, and you're not making millions of dollars, so you're not at the top of your game. You're still developing. But in the NFL, in the pros, I don't think home field matters a whole lot. And we saw that it doesn't matter a whole lot, because the Jets have two consecutive road playoff wins. Didn't help the Bengals any that they were at home. It didn't help the Chargers any that they were at home. And if you remember 2005, when Pittsburgh won the Super Bowl, they had three straight road games, and then they won the Super Bowl. They beat the Bengals at home, they beat Indianapolis at home, and they beat Denver at home. So, you know, I don't think it matters a whole lot. And that's why it's an even playing field for everybody in the playoffs. But that's just my little two cents on it. Now we go to the NFC. Now we got to go to the NFC. We got to talk about this little matchup here that I didn't think would happen. Honestly, didn't think this would come out this way, because I was not feeling I was not feeling New Orleans at all coming in. I thought there'd be a little bit more shakeup in the NFC, because I thought the NFC was wide open. I thought that the two top teams, Minnesota and New Orleans, both had some flaws, and I'm actually pretty surprised that it's 1-2. Top two seeds actually made it to the NFC Championship game. But looking ahead, you got to look at New Orleans, and Drew Brees. It all starts with Drew Brees. It all starts with the quarterbacks for both teams, to tell you the truth. But the thing I think that separates Minnesota, they got a pass rush. They got a ferocious pass rush. And that's exactly what you need to slow down a rhythm offense like New Orleans. And we all saw in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, when you have a pass rush, and the Giants sure did, they had Strahan, they had Tuck, they had Umanura, and they were all rotating in there, you can definitely disrupt a prolific passing team like the 2007 Patriots. 50 touchdowns with Tom Brady, you can disrupt that. You may not need great corners or great secondary, but if you have a great pass rush, you can make something happen against an offense like that. And I think this is very similar, you know, because, tell you the truth, Jared Allen is probably better than any three of those guys that the Giants had a couple years ago. And Drew Brees, I don't think he was up to the 2007 level of Tom Brady, but he's pretty damn close. So, you know, you got to have a pass rush to stop a guy like that. You can't expect to play coverage against Drew Brees, because he's got about six receivers that he always goes to, and you really can't key on one guy, because they all do the same thing. Henderson, Meacham, Shockey, even a couple of running backs out of the backfield, Reggie Bush. You know, all these guys. You have so many targets to throw to. You can't cover them all. So it's the only thing you can do, beat up the quarterback. And if Minnesota can beat up the quarterback the way I think they can, they're going to the Super Bowl. So I'm picking Jets, Minnesota to go all the way. And then in the Super Bowl, Favre against his old team, that's going to be interesting. That is going to be one heck of a game. If it happens, it probably won't, because that's, you know, my playoff record is not really good right now. All right, I went 0-4 in the first weekend, the wild card weekend. And the only game I got right this weekend was the Minnesota game. So I'm 1-7. I'm a proud 1-7. You couldn't do that if you tried. And believe me, I tried. I tried to do something, and it didn't work. So whatever I say, believe the opposite. Okay, I think it's going to be Minnesota Jets, so that really means it's going to be New Orleans Colts. I wouldn't mind seeing that Super Bowl either. I wouldn't mind seeing that. That's a good game. Drew Brees, a little Peyton Manning action. I'd have no problem with that at all. No problem with that. Wow, you know, that's unbelievable that the Saints and the Jets are in the championship games. Two hard luck franchises that you never really thought would get that far. You know, they've been as hard luck can be, and it's been that way ever since I can't remember either of those two squads getting anything done. But that's the way it is, you know. That's just the way the crazy playoffs go, man. That's just the way everything just shook out that way. And the Saints are pretty confident. They just got done blowing out the Cardinals. What happened in that game, by the way? We didn't even talk about that game. I don't even think that game is worth talking about, to tell you the truth. I mean, come on. For crying out loud, how about you guys give us a good playoff game for once, you know? It's unbelievable how bad these games have been. Kurt Warner, by the way, he's finished. That's a prediction that I think is going to hold up pretty well. mean, if you saw that hit, if you saw that hit that he took, you know what I'm talking about. And a lot of people are arguing, oh, that was a dirty hit. Well, you know what? Kurt Warner, I think Kurt Warner was at fault there, because you can't be that stupid, Kurt. You're 38. You can't move. Why would you get in the line of fire like that and think you can make a tackle after the turnover? Just get out of the way. You know, just get out of the way. Let the other guys make the tackle and then live to fight another day. But he wandered into the danger zone, if you will, and he got blasted. I have no problem with that hit. I have no problem at all with that hit. He should not have been there. And they have a rule now. That was the Warren Sapp rule a couple years ago when he popped a guy on the Packers that was nowhere near the play. You can't hit a defenseless guy on a turnover when he's not near the play. So if Kurt Warner was just like, you know, 20 yards or 30, 40 yards away from the action, they can't touch him now. He's not trying to make the play, so they can't touch him. And if they did touch him, that would be a penalty. So Kurt Warner, he should have known that. He should have known the situation and stayed away from the play. But he walked right into it. So I have no problem with the hit. It was not a late hit. It was not a dirty hit. It was just Kurt Warner being stupid. And he paid the price. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back after this.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at blogtalkradio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blogtalkradio.com/baseballgeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the millions of American fantasy owners who suffer from Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros901.com for your Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome now.
Fantasy versus Reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed. More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lamming, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, we're back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We are powered by All Access Football, NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and also FSC.fm. And again, I got to say, man, there's absolutely no action in this chat room. This is just very disappointing for me, because I usually have a little conversation going on with Walkie33. And, you know, I know his Cowboys lost, but you got to be a better sport than that. You got to tune in anyway. You can't just be like, oh, my team's out of it, and Tony Romo's a pumpkin, and, you know, you got to face the music. You got to face the music, but he's not doing that. So we got to talk about Norv Turner, because I think he should be fired immediately. But he hasn't been. He's been given an extension through 2013, and I can't understand why. I can't understand for the life of me why they would do that, especially when you consider with 2:15 to go and two clock stoppages in their back pocket. They had the two-minute warning plus a timeout. They go ahead and decide to onside kick the ball to the Jets. Now, I don't think they would have stopped the Jets anyway. The Jets were just on a mission on that last drive there. And, you know, they were just going to run the ball right down the throats of the San Diego Chargers. It might not have made a difference, but if you kick it away, you get two timeouts, and then by the third play, you know they're going to run the ball. And you would have had good field position with the ball back, and you would have probably had about a minute left. Because you take it down to the two-minute warning after the first down. After the second down, you call timeout. And after the third down, they'll run it down to about, you know, a minute and change. So you figure you'd have decent field position at your own 35 or whatever. And you'd have a minute to work with, or thereabouts. And you might have had a chance, if you can make a play on defense, to give the ball back to Phillip Rivers. But they didn't decide to do that, now did they? And plus, you also got to remember, the Chargers lined up for an onside kick, and the Jets were lined up to receive the onside kick, so there was nobody back there if you wanted to kick it deep. So, heck, you might have even been able to recover the football if you kicked it deep, because nobody was back. The ball would have just been rolling around back there. And who knows what could have happened. But, you know, if you look like Al Gore, you're probably going to lose. And that's exactly what happened to him. So I'm not a big fan, and not a big fan of Norv Gore. And that's just the way it is. So with 18 minutes remaining in the program, I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box. Check us out on NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.fm. Let's turn our attention towards the upcoming draft. And I know we had a little action here with the mock draft a couple weeks ago. Things have changed now. A couple of more teams are cemented into where they're picking, like the Chargers and the Patriots and the Cowboys. Yeah, so it's shaping up. We pretty much know who's picking where, and we know what's going down. So let's look at the draft here. At the top of the list, you have the hapless St. Louis Rams. And like we said before, they could go in a number of different directions. I still don't think they take a quarterback. Even though the quarterback is they're in a position of need at quarterback, because Mark Bolger's finished. The guy had a concussion and a broken leg in the same game. I mean, if that's not a clue that he's finished, I don't know what is. But you got Steve Spagnuolo, defensive-minded coach. And you've got Ndamukong Suh, probably the best defensive player to come out in the draft in the last 10 years. So I think that makes perfect sense that they would go after him. Plus, you'd be building yourself a pretty nasty defense there. Chris Long, Carricker, Laurinaitis, all in your front seven, and then you got Suh. That's pretty nasty. Maybe Leonard Little could, you know, maybe he's got a little bit left in the tank, and if you had a guy like Suh collapsing the offensive line, maybe Leonard Little could get a spark of life, and he could do something off the edge. Because, you know, a guy like Suh makes everybody around him better. So maybe Leonard Little can regain the form that he had about 7-8 years ago if he had a dominant tackle inside like Suh. So then you got the number 2 pick going to the Detroit Lions. Wow, the Detroit Lions need everything. I mean, they could go Eric Berry. They could go Gerald McCoy. They could go Russell Okung. They could do a number of things. They might even trade down, to tell you the truth. Because, remember, quarterbacks, they've got their quarterback already, and you got Jimmy Clausen, Sam Bradford out there, you know. You got some guys that maybe teams would want to trade up for, because the Redskins are definitely looking at Jimmy Clausen at 4. So if somebody really wants Jimmy Clausen that badly, maybe they want to make a deal with the Lions. Because, you know, the Lions need bodies. You know, they're not one player away from making an impact. So even though Gerald McCoy and Eric Berry, I like them a lot, I mean, what difference would they make on the Lions, for crying out loud? You know? So there you go. But I think if they do keep the pick, and it's really hard to tell who's going to trade and who's going to do stuff like that. If they do keep the pick, you got to go with either Berry or McCoy. And since I like D tackles, I think D tackles are more important than safeties, especially a guy that can do what Gerald McCoy does. I mean, he can rush the passer. And when you can rush the passer from the D-tackle position, I mean, that breaks down the offense. That totally breaks down the offense. Even though Berry's going to be great, I think Berry is definitely going to be a great player. Just having a D-tackle that could collapse the pocket and that doesn't allow the quarterback to step up and throw, that's huge. So when you have a D-tackle that could be as good as Gerald McCoy versus a safety like Eric Berry, I think you got to go tackle. Especially when you consider that the rules being what they are, you can't touch a receiver, you can't hit him defenseless receiver, you can't do this, you can't do that. There's so many restrictions in the secondary. You know, you got to think that a D-tackle is more important. And we all saw that, you know, if you rush the passer, you can make up for having an average secondary. That's exactly how the Giants won their Super Bowl. They had pass rushers. They had average secondary, and they won. So I think D-tackle is more important than safety. Then third, we've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they go Eric Berry, since the other two D-tackles will be taken. You got to go Eric Berry. I think that's a no-brainer. The guy looks to be like the next Ed Reed, who might be retiring, by the way. I thought that was a total shocker coming out of left field. But, you know, 8 years in the league for Ed Reed. He's been banged up this year. And two straight disappointing losses in the playoffs. They went to the AFC Championship game last year. They lost in disappointing fashion then, and they lost in disappointing fashion this year. And plus, he's 31 years old. That weighs on you, man. So maybe that's why he's thinking about hanging it up. But Eric Berry is pretty much a clone of Ed Reed. I mean, the guy doesn't just pick off the ball. He picks it off and puts it in the end zone. So he's unbelievable. Now, Redskins are interesting because they have no offensive line. However, they don't have quarterback help either. Jason Campbell, I don't believe in him at all. And it might be time to move on. But the problem is, if you pick a Jimmy Clausen, can you keep him healthy with that crappy offensive line? That's the catch-22. You do need a quarterback, but you need offensive line help. And, you know, if you don't have that offensive line help, Jimmy Clausen is going to get killed out there, just like Matthew Stafford got killed this year. That's why I didn't think the Lions should have taken Stafford, because you can't protect him anyway. What's the use of drafting him? You need an offensive line before you get your quarterback. And now we see Matthew Stafford has a number of injuries. Knee injury, shoulder injury, you know, and it's all because they didn't get the line. They didn't get the line help that they needed. So I think the same thing's going to happen here. I think the Redskins are so desperate for quarterback, they're going to overlook offensive line help, and they're going to take Jimmy Clausen fourth, and then this Jimmy Clausen over here is going to be on the IR by week 7. So that's what I think's going to happen. I hope I'm wrong for his sake, but, you know, that's kind of what that's kind of how it goes. So number five overall. Speaking of a team that needs offensive line help, Kansas City, Russell Okung is a consensus number one tackle, assuming he doesn't do what you know, show up like 300 pounds overweight for the combine and then, like, you know, skip out on all the practices like my buddy from Alabama did last year, you know. And then number six, we've got Sam Bradford. Everybody thinks that the Seahawks need some help. Matt Hasselbeck's getting a little long in the tooth there. So Sam Bradford might be an option for Seattle at six, but, you know, I got to wonder about that. I question Sam Bradford. I question his toughness. You know, he was only hit 49 times his sophomore year when he won the Heisman. And then the first time he gets hit this year against BYU, he goes down. And then he gets hit again against Texas, he goes down. And you know he's going to get hit if he goes to a bad team like this, because that's what happens when you're on a bad team. You got no help around you, and you're going to have to take some pops. And I don't know if he could do that. So a lot of people are saying Sam Bradford at number six. Heck, I think Dez Bryant would be a good pick there. I'd like to see if Matt Hasselbeck can rejuvenate himself by getting a stud receiver to work with. You know, you already got Houshmandzadeh, and he'd be a great influence on a young player like Dez Bryant. I think that would work perfectly. So that might be exactly what the doctor ordered for a guy like Matt Hasselbeck, who hasn't had a receiver of that caliber ever, I don't think. I could be hard-pressed to find a Seattle Seahawk wide receiver that Matt Hasselbeck's worked with that has the talent of a Dez Bryant. So I think that would work. And then you got at number seven. By the way, I'm Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box. And we are on the air thanks to NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and also FSC.FM. So we're looking at the NFL Draft, and we're rounding out the top 10 here. Number 7. I got to believe that eventually, someday, in my lifetime, the Cleveland Browns have to address the fact that they've got no pass rush and they've got no speed on defense at all. None. They've got no speed. They can't do anything defensively because they can't get to the football. So eventually, maybe it's this draft, maybe it's next draft, but eventually they're going to have to do something. And I thought they could have went out and gotten Brian Arakpo last year, but they decided to trade their pick 46 different times, and they end up with their first overall pick being a center. So eventually, they're going to have to do something. Now, they have a lot to choose from. They could go Jason Pierre-Paul, South Florida. He's got some speed. Rolando McClain, we all saw that in the national championship game. He's got speed. Taylor Mays, got some speed there. I mean, they need help at all levels, at secondary, at linebacker, and also at defensive line. But I think Rolando McClain would be the best bet here. Because if you're running a 3-4, and that's exactly what the Cleveland Browns do, linebackers are the most important part of that speed that we talk about, because they need to fly around and make all the plays. The defensive linemen, they're just the grunts. They're pretty much the offensive linemen for the linebackers. They keep them free so that the linebackers could fly around and do things. So I think they should go Rolando McClain 7 overall. Now, the Raiders are going to screw this up at 8, because that's what they always do. Al Davis, being the brainless retard that he is, he's going to go ahead and think that Taylor Mays is the answer at 8. You know why? Because he's got the height, the weight, and the speed. He's out of position a lot. He overruns a lot of plays. I think he might be the next Landry. Laron Landry, coming out of LSU. That's now with the Redskins, and he's always out of position. And there's a lot of blown coverages in Washington, thanks to him. I think that Taylor Mays is going to end up like that. But Al Davis doesn't know this, because he's an idiot. And that's pretty much it. So I think that Taylor Mays is a perfect fit for what the Raiders like to do, which is overdraft on physical abilities and overlook the fact that the guy doesn't know how to be in position to make plays. It's exactly what the Raiders like to do. So, number 9, Anthony Davis out of Rutgers. That would be a nice move. That would be a nice move because they need offensive line help. But again, they have a lot of weaknesses. They could go C.J. Spiller. I think the Bills could go C.J. Spiller. I mean, they don't have any threats. They don't have anything that scares you on offense, you know. So they could go offensive line because they lost Jason Peters to the Eagles. They could go Spiller. They could even go Jermaine Gresham, because they need something that Trent Edwards, you know, he needs to throw the football to somebody. Or Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, they could even go quarterback. Do you believe in either of these quarterbacks? Maybe a Tim Tebow. I mean, do you believe that a guy out of Harvard, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is the answer at quarterback? Do you believe Trent Edwards is the answer at quarterback? The guy's always injured. So they could go quarterback, they could go running back, they could go offensive line. It's really anyone's guess what Buffalo can do. Now, Jacksonville, if Tim Tebow lasts this long, I mean, that's a lock. They're going Tim Tebow, and that's it. Because they need to sell tickets, and they need some hype for their franchise. I mean, this is like the most boring franchise in the league, except for Maurice Jones-Drew. I mean, he's quite a character, but, you know, they need a spark. And whether or not you think Tim Tebow is a real quarterback or not, I think is irrelevant. They need something. They need some kind of momentum to keep this team in Jacksonville. And what better way to get a hometown kid like Tebow? So I think you see the Buffalo Bills could go any number of different directions. I think it's the total opposite for Jacksonville. They can only go in one direction. And if Tim Tebow's taken, I don't know, I don't think he'll be taken before this. But if he is, Jacksonville is up the creek without a paddle. They really need Tim Tebow to be there. So that's your top 10. I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box, powered by All Access Football, NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and, of course, FSC.FM. Really disappointed. We didn't get anything going in the chat room at all, man. We were like the Ravens offense today. We didn't get anything going. We couldn't run the ball. We couldn't throw the ball. We couldn't kick the ball. We couldn't do anything in this chat room. But we'll just have to save that for another time, another battle next week, Tuesday at 10 a.m. So I want to thank NFL Draft Bible for having us on, collegefootballinsiders.com and fsc.fm. I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box, and I'm signing off.